listening to an archive edition of Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How will you celebrate the holidays this year? While many people are scaling back on gift buying in these tough times, anecdotal evidence says that Americans still plan to eat and drink well. With that in mind, we have two expert guests to offer some professional insight into wines and cheeses that you might want to work into your holiday menus this year. Daryl Beeson is a Texas-based sommelier and wine writer. Rich Rogers is the owner of Scardello Artisan Cheese in Dallas. Gentlemen, welcome to Think.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
If you have questions or ideas that you want to share, we will take your calls and emails throughout this hour. You can get on the line now to 1-800-
Please don't call now. The show has been pre-recorded.
As always, is think@kera.org. Well, Daryl, we'll start with you. What wines are you really excited about this year?
The ones that taste good.
As always.
Kind of thing. I'm kind of a fuddy-duddy, and I've really been turned the past year on organic and sustainable farming. And it used to be the thought in the wine people, if you were a wine knowledgeable person, those wines cost more and they don't taste very good. And they do. And there's a lot of excitement there. And we have something to talk about here that I brought with me. But that's exciting. But I was just thinking, it was funny driving in, I was thinking, I didn't know what the cheeses would be. And we got some wonderful, an array of cheese here. And if the cheeses are particularly ripe, and my wine insights are as fallible as they usually are, we might call the show Stink. So we can see, but I don't know. Let's go further.
Well, are there particularly like seasonal cheeses, Rich, that are available maybe this time of year that you can't get other times?
I mean, cheese is a very seasonal thing. And so like right now we have one of the cheeses I brought is Hopelessly Blue from Dripping Springs. It's a goat's milk blue. And I got a handful of wheels in, and those are probably the last of the season because goats only kid during parts of the year, so the goat's milk is all gone. And so, yeah, there are definitely certain cheeses that are available right now, and it's just kind of a seasonal thing.
A friend of mine is actually really obsessed with that Hopelessly Blue. What's so different about it, about the taste, than other blue cheese?
Well, it's a little bit softer because it's goat's milk, so it's a lighter blue, and it's got a little creaminess to it. It's just really lovely.
Well, let's we can start some tasting, and you can talk about what you've brought. And I probably will have you guys taste things, and I will not have a mouthful of wine and cheese throughout the show. But one of our favorite sounds. Let's see, Daryl's got a bottle of wine here, clinking for dramatic effect. Now he's turning the corkscrew. This is radio, so we have to sort of create the picture of everything happening.
Extract the cork. Let's do this. Oh,
very
I love
nice.
That sound.
Nice. Very nice.
I'd love to have that on my phone, you know, like.
That's the ringer?
The ring phone, yeah.
So what are you opening right now?
This is from Mendocino. Mendocino is north of Sonoma, far north, and it is where you get into the deep, you know, redwoods and those sequoias and huge trees. And it's an area that survived Prohibition because they were so deep up there, nobody could stop them making wine. A lot of Italians. And this particular wine is named after the winemaker Paul Dolan, D-O-L-A-N, who's important. And I need cups.
Oh, here. We have some styrofoam cups here.
Okay. By the way, for the sake of the FCC, we were not actually drinking wine. Actually, Jeff Whittington has a soundboard, and he's making these sounds happen where we can – it sounds like we're drinking wine, but we're not actually drinking
wine.
Well,
I'm not engineering the board, so I think it's okay, but I'm not going to drink any wine.
Well, I love that sound.
Maybe after the show.
But
the great sound.
This guy, he was involved with Fetzer, and he's now involved with a company called Parducci, and they do organic. And farmers – this is the thing. Like I said, I was skeptical. I always thought it was sort of a weird tie-dye movement in wine. I didn't really think it fit. But the deal is if you can avoid using chemicals, you save money. And maybe if the wine it tastes better, you can extract more of the French call it terroir, you know, that sense of being, not just soil, but sense of being from a place. If you can do that, then do it. And we've had a big movement. And Paul Dolan is probably the top person in California behind that. You may not know his name yet, but you will in about 10 years.
These are quite hefty pours, Daryl. I have to get through a whole hour here.
It's okay. You don't have to. We do in wine a lot. Like, you know, I teach sommelier certification, and we are famous for where you do a taste and you spit and you dump. It's okay to do that.
You know, my people don't do it that way. take a sip. Tell me what you taste in this.
Okay. On the nose, I'm getting like blackberry, blueberry, briar. You know, briar patch, you know, wild kind of fruit. And then I get good acid, which you need with cheese. Cheese, acid, and fat work together. And this is going to be fun with the cheese because we do acid and fat every morning when we do coffee with cream. Because coffee is really acidic and pretty difficult by itself unless you're a trained drinker of coffee. And that you put the cream in, and then suddenly it's synergistic. It turns into that. And this is a red wine with bright red fruit, you know, acid with that. And I think it's ready for a little cheese.
All right.
Let's see what happens.
Okay. Well, which one would you like to try? We've got a triple cream from Champlain Creamery in Vermont.
Really soft cheese,
really
right?
Soft, lush cow's milk cheese. It's an organic cheese, and they actually add cream to the milk when they're making the cheese, which is what makes it so creamy. Then we have a sheep's milk cheese from Everona Dairy called Marble in Virginia, and they put a little bit of vegetable ash in the middle. That's what gives it its marbled look. And then finally we have Hopelessly Blue from Dripping Springs, and it's a goat's milk blue.
So organic is a big deal for you, Rich, and cheeses from the United States are a big deal for you.
Well, and that's the thing that we've focused on is about half of the cheeses in the case are American-made cheeses. And American cheesemakers in the last 10 years have really kind of come into their own and they've realized that the cheese they're making is part of a place. And so if you don't have a Swiss mountain, Alpine mountain in your backyard, maybe you should make a cheese that isn't a Swiss cheese but something that's part of where you're from. And so we're seeing that in Vermont and California, Oregon, even right here in Texas.
Great. Well, you can slice one off and pass it off, and we'll see what Daryl thinks and how you think it sort of goes. And we will take your calls this hour, 1-800-933-5372.
Please don't call now. The show has been pre-recorded.
Let's speak to Michael in Dallas. Hey, Michael.
Hello. I just have a question for Daryl. One of my favorite wines in recent years was one Artesa, and it was a Spanish-owned company, mm-hmm. and according to you. And I love their Carneros and Russian River Pinots. And the other night I had one, a 2002 Reserve Cab that was just fantastic. But I haven't seen it anywhere, and I haven't heard anything about it. And I know they lowered their prices a few years ago, and then it seemed like it just went away. And I'll listen on the radio if you can just tell about that company.
Thanks for your call.
I was in Sonoma a few months ago and visited there, and they're really doing gangbusters. It's a beautiful hill on a vista, and Carneros do a lot of weddings and things there. They started out going the Pinot Noir route, they started doing the sparkling route, like you said. But Pinot Noir is a key part of sparkling, and they're doing that now. And I think they're alive and well, but distribution's been kind of difficult lately. You know, the laws of putting a wine in each state is a different law, and it's sometimes difficult because we have a shrinking of big companies. In other words, used to be there might be 10 companies representing wine in North Texas. Now there's three big companies, two sort of big and some small. And a lot of times distribution is just really tough. But the good thing is the internet, and you can avail yourself to that, and you should be able to get their wine there.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. I see, Rich, that you've made three different sizes for these three cheeses that you cut off. Is there a good rule of thumb for how big to make the portions if you happen to cut it up ahead of time?
Generally what you're looking to do is, if you're doing like a formal cheese plate or just something for people to grab and nibble, about an ounce is about what you want. So, you know, just kind of a nice size bite or two. But the other thing is when somebody's putting out a cheese tray, I generally tell them just to put some knives out, not to cut it ahead of time, because cutting it's going to dry the cheese out. It's going to affect the flavor. The most important thing to do is make sure you bring it to room temperature because, you know, that way the cold doesn't mask any of the great flavors that are there in the cheese.
That makes a huge difference if it's been out for a while.
Oh, absolutely. So depending on the size of the piece, you know, you might leave it out for 45 minutes to an hour. I mean, you have to realize most of these cheeses have spent their lives at, you know, much higher temperatures than your refrigerator aging, and so they'll be fine.
Now, one thing I should mention, we normally do with my class, the International Sommelier Guild, blatant plague, plug, excuse me, Freudian slip. But you know, I teach in Dallas, Houston, and Austin, and we certify sommeliers. But we do a day where I call it What a Friend We Have in Cheeses. And I had to be careful because I'm standing too near the tower here, and we might get struck by lightning.
Right.
By that one. But I'll tell my students that, like, for 20 students, I'll say each of you bring an interesting cheese. I'd rather you bring a smaller portion of an interesting cheese, and I want you to bring about 3 to 4 ounces. And with 20 people, everyone can try. Cheese is wonderful in that a little bit goes a long ways. You know, and you look at the prices, you say, my God. But a little bit goes a long ways. And I'll tell them 3 or 4 ounces, that's about the size of a cassette. And every time I do that, one of them in the students in the back row says, what's a cassette?
That's how long you've been doing this, right?
And I say it's about 1/4 the size of an 8-track. You know, kind of
thing. We have an email from Deborah who asks, can you suggest a cheese that tastes close to Limburger? I live in McKinney and have had a tough time finding Limburger there.
Oh, man. There are a lot of stinky cheeses, what we call wash-drying cheeses, and there are a number of them that I don't know that there's nothing that tastes quite like Limburger, but there are a number of them that have lots of meaty flavors and so things like a poisse or something like bourree or timberdoodle, which are American handmade cheeses. Just anything with an orange rind that has quite a bit of a pungent smell, but don't be turned off by the smell because what the cheese inside doesn't taste anything like that. It's usually very mushroomy and meaty and just really delicious. Those are my favorite type cheeses, by the way. So,
is there a good way to sort of remove the smell after you've served the cheese? Do you have to get everything out of the house or?
No, just a good hand washing of the dishes is fine. But yeah, you can definitely tell, like, when you pull out some Levero or a real Munster, when that cheese is in the room, you know it.
1-800-933.
Please don't call now. The show has been pre-recorded.
Janet in Shady Shores. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I have a question and a comment. I recently discovered a Norwegian cheese. It's a caramel. I think it's spelled G-J-O-S-T, Jost.
Mm-hmm.
And it's brown, but it's a goat cheese. And it tastes like caramel. And so we eat it with apples. So it tastes like a caramel apple, but at the end you get that goat, that really nice goat taste from a goat cheese. And I'm just wondering what kind of wine I would pair that with, maybe a Gewürztraminer or an after-dinner wine.
That's a good direction, and there's one of the faculty at El Centro, he loves that cheese and brings it any time I do my cheese event, and it's sort of like a Kraft fudgy on goat steroids or something. Pardon me. I should have used the cough button. I'm sorry. But anyway, I would do something with sweetness and acid, and that would be Germanic, something like German dessert wine. Something northern, maybe a Tokaj from Hungary, mm-hmm. and it will be a match made in heaven.
Sounds great. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We're talking about wine and cheese in advance of holiday entertaining. Rich Rogers is here. He owns Scardello Artisan Cheese in Dallas. Also sommelier and wine writer Daryl Beeson is with us. We'll be back in just a moment. And if you want to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Listening to an archive edition of Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Wine educator and sommelier Daryl Beeson is here, along with Rich Rogers of Scardello Artisan Cheese in Dallas. You are welcome to join our conversation about holiday wines and cheeses at 1-800-933-5372.
Please don't call now. The show has been pre-recorded.
Or you can email think@kera.org. Let's go next to Bonnie in Forney. Hey, Bonnie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually from California, recent transplant of about 3 years now. My husband and I actually are, we grew grapes in California, some Australian Shiraz, and so we know a little bit about wine, and we have been looking for something out here, and I'm hoping your guests are familiar with it, but there's a chain of stores in California called Trader Joe's.
Yes.
And Charles Krug came up with this idea to bottle wine, and it was under $2 Chuck. And I was trying to find some similar kind of program or marketing angle from some wineries out here. Do you know of anybody in this area in the Dallas?
No, the problem is this. In California, you can a winery can sell directly to a store. And when times are tough and you got a lot of juice, you can just say, look, we'll strike you a deal, and you can have a bottle of wine for $3 or $4 or something like that. And I've seen $2 Chuck in Ohio and some other markets. Texas, unfortunately, is one of the more expensive markets for wine. We have what's called a three-tier system where the wine enters the state through a broker who makes a percentage of the wine sale, goes to a wholesaler, and then the wholesaler sells it to a store. And there may actually be in some parts where the dryer is in Dallas that they sell it to a restaurant. So it's each time it gets bumped up. And the $2 Chuck kind of concept, which was neat to kind of make some cash flow in a tough year or two, it doesn't equate to Texas, and it's a shame. I'm sorry.
You, on the other hand, Rich, I guess are constantly on the phone with individual cheesemakers.
Right. Because American cheesemakers, there are a lot of them who, you know, they don't make enough cheese to deal with the distributor, or they don't necessarily like the distribution system. And so in order to bring their cheeses in, you know, you basically have to go directly to them. And what's nice about that is it builds a good relationship between you and the cheesemaker. It allows you to give them feedback on their cheese when things are a little bit different or off. And that's actually been one of the most enjoyable parts of it.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Sam in Mansfield. Hi, Sam.
Hi. I have a question about Blue Stilton cheese, and I know it comes from England. I've tasted several different kinds of Blue Stilton, and some of them have a metallic taste. And I would like to hear your comments on, is that the true taste of a true Blue Stilton, and where might I find some in the Dallas area?
Thanks for your call.
Well, I mean, there are several different Stilton makers. There's a ton of them, and they're all part of a group, and they follow certain rules, and some are better than others. Neal's Yard Dairy, which is a purveyor of fine English cheeses, their favorite Stilton maker, the one that they usually buy from, is Colston Bassett. And so a lot of times when you're buying Stilton, you can see sort of where the farm is, if it's Colston Bassett or another. That's where you can kind of see who's making a higher quality Stilton. But the metallic taste, I don't think that's typical of that cheese.
Question here via email. Send this one to you, Daryl. What are the basic rules when trying to pair wines with cheeses? Because you have made the point that not all wine goes with all cheese.
Right. That's sort of a myth, but because cheese sort of coats the palate with kind of fat, and it makes it harder to discern the wine. I would not do an extremely expensive red wine, you know, Bordeaux, Cabernet with cheese necessarily, because you're kind of coating and not getting some of the complexities. But like we were discussing before, if you were doing a party and you want to serve cheaper wine, you can hide the cheapness of the wine with the cheese. And that's not a put down to cheese. The cheese is helping the wine taste.
Sort of elevates the wine.
Yeah, elevates the wine. And because of that, it hides the faults kind of thing. But there's certain, like the gentleman that called about Stilton, there's a classic match of Stilton with port that is almost as good as peanut butter with chocolate. Not quite, but almost. And there are, like, we've got some Sauvignon Blanc. You mentioned, you noticed the Rodney Strong here, which I like very much. And then we have the Sterling, which is organic, Sauvignon Blanc. When you get a high-acid Sauvignon Blanc, and some of the best examples are New Zealand and from the Loire of France, like Sancerre, that with goat cheese, which is high acid, you get a match. You know, you kind of a dovetail effect where you've got the cheese has high acid, the wine does, and it can be a beautiful match.
Let's talk about dessert cheeses and then dessert wines, and I don't know if there are any that do work together. We don't do that so often in this country, but it's very, very common other places.
Well, I mean, cheese is my favorite dessert. Cheese is wonderful because it's a way to extend a meal. It's a way to extend conversation. And, you know, sometimes I like to do a full cheese plate for dessert, or other times maybe it's just, you know, a really nice blue. And speaking of Stilton, I mean, one of my favorite pairs is Stilton with just a little bit of honey on it, or even truffle honey, which is even better.
Truffle honey, really?
Yeah, truffle honey and Stilton are unbelievable.
And dessert wines, Daryl.
Right.
Particular favorites? Port?
Port, which has got that magnificent, it's got the tannin, which would be bitter by itself, and then it has the high alcohol, about 18-20%. Watch out. And then it has the concentrated residual sugar, and it's sort of a triangular balance, and it works very well. And then that with the salty elements of the Stilton. And also there's a concept now we've talked about before called umami,
mm-hmm.
out of Japan.
That fifth flavor, right.
Right, that savory. And it's almost like a perfect chord, kind of like Aaron Copland doing an open fifth chord kind of thing. And come to think of it, when you open a port, that's an open fifth. But anyway, it's just that beautiful combination of notes.
The first time I ever tried port, Daryl, was a really very, very good bottle that I sort of came upon by accident. It's a long story that I won't go into, but it was exceptional. I thought, this is great. And I haven't been able to match that with ports that I can actually afford. Are there any sort of lower-priced ones?
There's a neat concept. You know, vintage port can be pretty expensive,
$75
to $100. But the British came up with an idea, and I like this very much, and that is called LBV, late bottled vintage. So what they do, a vintage port goes into barrel for 2 years if it's very good vintage, and they declare it, so to speak. They say, we're going to make a vintage port. And then it goes in the bottle and generally takes about 16, 18 years to really show its prime. And LBV is a pretty good year. We think it's good, but it's not the best of the best of the decade kind of thing. We'll put it in a barrel for 4 to 6 years, accelerate the aging, and then we'll bottle it, and therefore you can drink it pretty well on release. So like an LBV right now might be, I haven't shopped around for them, but could be about a 2000 vintage. Probably would be about $22 versus $50 to $150.
1-800-933-9372.
Please don't call now. The show has been pre-recorded.
Let's go next to Michael in Dallas. Hi, Michael.
Hello there. First of all, thanks a lot for the program. It's wonderful information. I do have a question that my wife and I have become big fans of the McPherson Viognier, and we're always trying to introduce folks to it, but we want to make sure that we're presenting it with the correct cheeses, and wonder if you have some sort of recommendations ranging from a hard cheese to a soft cheese.
Well, I know Kim McPherson very well, and he would usually do something like Velveeta, would be my experience with the guy. I was just talking to him before. He's probably the finest winemaker in Texas, and his brother, John McPherson, works in California with the winery, but it would all be with the wine. And like I said, it's hard to do. Probably, we were talking before the show, but I've found, and some people in wine think, that it, when in doubt, use a really hard cheese, like a Romano, Parmesan, Pecorino. Pecorino. Those kind of are sort of like, they'll work with anything kind of thing. If you're not sure. But he does an array of wines, and my problem is which wine, and also the acid thing. We talked about acid with fat. In Texas, it's tougher to get acidity because of the warm weather.
I know people bring wine, certainly as host or hostess gifts, and increasingly they will bring cheese. What do you recommend, and we'll get a wine recommendation in a minute. Rich, if you're recommending something that is pretty much always going to be a crowd pleaser, what do you tell people to bring?
Well, there are several. You got to know your audience, but crowd pleasing cheeses. There's a great goat's milk cheese called Humboldt Fog from Cypress Grove in California. Pretty much anybody that tastes that falls in love with it. It's a little gooey around the edges, and it's you know, creamy and more crumbly in the middle. You know, also things like a, you know, a Swiss Gruyere, any of those.
Sort of a milder.
Yeah, I mean, any of those, you know, nutty Swiss cheeses. And you can kind of throw in, you know, something a little different if you don't want to kind of go that bland. I mean, it's not a bland cheese, but if you want to do something a little different, you can go with maybe something like a Sealander or Hockey Brig, some other kind of Swiss cheese that maybe somebody hasn't tasted before, but will have a lot of the same floral and nutty characteristics as a really nice Gruyere.
What do you think, Daryl, if we want to bring a crowd-pleasing white or a crowd-pleasing red?
Bubbles.
Ah, champagne.
Yeah, bubbles. Now, if you can afford to do champagne or a cava from Spain, which can be very affordable and high quality. And something that I liked, you know, when you get, you're doing a holiday thing, especially family, you've got your Aunt Edith and you got other people there that may not be really into dry wine. And I promote a thing like an Italian variety, option called Moscato. And you can do a domestic Moscato. It's called Ballatore. And this is, you can buy Ballatore in truck stops in West Texas, believe it or not, if they sell out.
We know it's good in West Texas.
Yeah. But it's made by Gallo, believe it or not. And it's about $9 a bottle. And I did a party with this family thing where I brought the beauty of it is at $9 a bottle, I could bring a handful of bottles. And it has that wonderful apricot nectar and bubbles. And it's okay if somewhere on the table you got congealed salad and cranberry sauce and who knows what and sweet things. But bubbles really help, and probably opting for a little sweeter. If you did the cava route, like we talked about in Spanish, do an extra dry, which is ironic. Extra dry is sweeter than brut.
1-800-933-5272.
Please don't call now. The show has been pre-recorded.
Let's go next to Ken in Salina. Hi, Ken.
Hi, good afternoon. First-time caller. And two questions, one wine, one cheese. Had a phenomenal cab, 97. Vineyard Liparita was the name, California, and I was curious. I haven't seen it anywhere several years. And the other was I use in making fondue Emmentaler Gruyere and Oppenfeller, 40, 40, and 20 to blend it. And I was curious what your recommendations would be for improving on that. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Well, for the fondue, I mean, Gruyere's great. I also like to sometimes mix in Fontina. You know, Emmentaler's wonderful as well. You know, those are any. Also, a little bit of raclette is really nice. I prefer the French version, but the Swiss would take umbrage with that. So that would be my recommendation.
Do you add milk or cream into the mix?
Usually I use a little white wine and then a little bit of cornstarch as a thickener, but mm-hmm. Usually no cream. And the cheese takes care of that part.
And do you know the Liparita cab?
Liparita cab. If it's the winery I'm thinking of, it's south of San Jose, kind of heading towards Paso Robles and that area there. And they have a great following, not a huge production where they can be a national distribution, but I would think – once again, go to the internet and Google search, and you can probably find a way to get a bottle or three or four.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Phil in Dallas. Hi, Phil. Hi, Phil.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask about Maytag blue cheese, Montevina Zinfandel, the Amador County one, Hardy's Whiskers Blake Port, and can you buy wine in Texas over the internet? And I'd like to listen to the answer on the radio.
Thanks, Rico.
Thank
well, Maytag Blue is a classic American blue. It's a fantastic blue cheese, and it's available. I mean, there are a lot of places it's available. Anybody that's got quite a bit of fine cheese should have it in the case. We don't have it in the case right now, but it's a great blue cheese.
Wine online?
I am not the expert, but I understand the laws have changed a bit. For the longest time, there were 13 states in the U.S. that were not reciprocal, I think is the term, where it was a felony to ship wine to those states, and we were one. But I understand with the concerns about safety and travel, you know, like, for instance, they don't want you to bring a bottle of wine on your when you come on board on your carry-on. that the laws may have changed to a point where it's okay to ship, but there are certain ways you've got to initiate that order. And I am not an expert, but I would inquire with the wineries. The wineries definitely are not going to break the law, because if they have a felony charge, they lose their license to make wine. And they're very, very careful about following the law. But it might be that if you have a cousin in Kansas City, you ship the wine to them, and when you see them over the holidays, you pick it up and do. There are ways.
Well, as a wine consumer, not an expert, you can, you know, the law has changed, and you can actually receive wine from a winery in California. I mean, before it was kind of ship it to a brother-in-law and have them ship it to you, but now, you know, you definitely can deal direct. I don't know if you can have anybody else ship it to you, but I think that wineries you can.
Speaking of safety, if there happens to be cheese left over after a party, assuming we refrigerate it at the end of the evening, is it okay to eat it the next day?
I do. I eat it all the time. I mean, you know, cheese, like I said, I mean, it spent most of its time at much higher temperatures than your refrigerator. I mean, your refrigerator is actually really cold to store cheese. And, you know, a lot of times I tell customers that they should, you know, keep it in the cheese paper that we put it in, and then stick it in the bottom drawer of their refrigerator, which is the most moist part, so it won't dry out.
And, Daryl, is it possible, if there's ever anything left over, can you recork champagne or sparkling wine?
They make special stoppers, but between you and me, you can use the little cork thing like on a scotch bottle, mm-hmm. you know, where it's plastic on the top, and
right.
that, and it'll stay for about 2 or 3 days.
Great. We will be back in just a minute with Daryl Beeson and Rich Rogers. You can ask your questions about holiday wines and cheeses at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Listening to an archive edition of Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd, here with cheesemonger Rich Rogers of Scardello Artisan Cheese in Dallas, and sommelier and wine educator Daryl Beeson with now a bottle of
that
Sterling.
That was a romantic sound.
That was the twist cap. Daryl's not cracking his knuckles here. That was the twist cap on
yeah,
a
it's okay
to
have a twist on the bottle.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. And it makes it easier to put back in the fridge if you don't finish the bottle. I've never had that problem in my household. But you know, it's great. We've got a Sauvignon Blanc here to go, high acid. This is Sterling Vineyards, organic. And like I said, organic's okay. And I'm not an organic kind of person. I'm more of a stuffy, fuddy-duddy. But I'm more and more being converted that if the more sustainable farming practices you can do, the better. And it makes a better wine. So we were going to try with the cheese. We had talked about acid. And usually a Sauvignon Blanc has more acid than other white wines, especially Chardonnay, which we all tend to do. We've talked about it before, ABC, anything but Chardonnay, anything but Cabernet, because we tend to always get in the rut there. So I just thought I would pull the twist off of the bottle there, and we did.
Great. So. Sauvignon Blanc. Speaking of being snobbish, Chris in Dallas writes, in a popular Dallas grocery store, I saw a number of wines priced 3 for $10. I shuddered, but is it in fact possible that a $3 wine could be drinkable?
For me, it all depends. Well, you know what the story is.
Worth trying, I guess, for $3.
You know, you were talking about someone called in about Trader Joe's and the stores in California. There are some that are incredible where they'll have markdowns. And what I understand is from I work with KGO Radio in San Francisco on their food and wine reports, but that on Saturday morning you will see people going into Trader Joe's, and they'll buy these cheap wines, one of each, and they'll go back to the car, and then they lean deep into the seat where they can't be seen, and they're opening the wine and doing a little taste and deciding, okay, it's good. I'll go back in and buy a case. So, I don't know if you should do that.
You shouldn't be the one driving, probably, if that's your method. 1-800-933-5372.
Please don't call now. The show has been pre-recorded.
You can also email think@kera.org. Let's go next to Asra in Dallas. Hi, Asra.
Hi. I'm calling from Dallas, and during an international plane flight, I had you know, a little bit of cheese on the journey, and it turned out to be a double Gloucester, which I really loved. It was very luscious, nutty, had more flavor, I thought, than usual cheddar. And it's been hard for me to find a place in Dallas to get that, and I wondered if there were any recommendations.
Thanks for your call.
Well, wow. I mean, I would call around. You know, there are several large grocers that have a massive amount of cheese, and I've seen it seasonally in some of those places. And the other thing is a lot of times people like to mix up what's in the case. I mean, you know, we change out cheeses all the time. Some of it's seasonal because of the cheesemaker isn't producing that particular cheese. But a lot of times it's just, you know, change the variety or it's suggestions of people like you. So,
may I jump in? Gloucester kind of got my attention. And of course, it's spelled Gloucester, but it's Gloucester, like Worcestershire and all that weirdness. But there's a great saying in wine that I teach my students. This really, this if you're around someone from the UK, their jaw will drop if you know it. But if you're at a table, let's say you're doing port with the cheese, the Stilton. Normally, port is passed around port rather than starboard around the table, and you pour. And normally, it would in the old days, it'd be the gentleman would drink the port, and the ladies would go to the parlor and
that sherry, sort of thing. Right?
Yeah, or something. I don't know. I never understood that. But anyway. And there's always someone who's telling a story, and they're holding on the bottle, and you're kind of wishing they would pass it around. And what you would do, you'd say, "Do you know the vicar of Gloucester?" And the answer is yes. He's a very fine guy, but he would never pass the port. So, you know, vicar of Gloucester will get the port passed faster in the UK.
Well, we'll keep that in mind. Anne in Frisco writes, "There are varietal-specific wine glasses. Do they make a difference?"
They do. Mm-hmm. I've always been skeptical of this, but I've had chances at least five times to taste with George Riedel, who's the head of the Riedel wine glasses. Now, by the way, that's one of the mispronounced words. It is not Riedel. That's
like the high school in Greece, right?
Right. It's Riedel. And what he does, he'll do a tasting where he has Libby glasses and his, and you'll pour from one to the other, and you try it, and it's different. And it's different from glass to glass, too. And it is grape-specific. So there's something there. And the good news is, if you go, I think, can I say Target?
Well,
I
just did. I say it all the time.
Okay. But, you know, I know they sell a Riedel in like $5 a stem version. You can buy affordable Riedel, and it makes a difference.
We have an email next from Forrest in Dallas, who says, "Every time I manage to wind my way through Central Market, I get stuck at the cheese section. After a bit, though, I turn away in frustration, knowing nothing of the respective qualities and characteristics of what's arrayed before me. I end up at the local grocer where I buy a Maytag Blue or a cheap Stilton or even the cheap Danish import Rosenberg for my blue cheese fix. Wants to know if there are any easy remedies for that kind of indecisive timidity."
Well, you know, I love shopping at Central Market, but I call it the wall. I mean, you go there, and I mean, it's daunting no matter how much you know about cheese because there's just so much of it there. And that's one of the things that we try to, I mean, even when people come into the shop and they look in the case and there's a lot of cheeses and a lot of unfamiliar names, and what we try to do is, you know, that's what we're there for, is to engage them and give them the information they need to make a good choice, and also to let them taste before they buy. I mean, that's, you know, a really nice way to figure out, well, do I like this or not? There are some great books and resources. Laura Werland's Cheese Essentials is a fantastic book to kind of increase your cheese knowledge.
1-800-933-5.
Please don't call now. The show has been pre-recorded.
Next on the line is Ben in Fort Worth. Hey, Ben.
Oh, hi. I don't know really a whole lot about wine, but I've been drinking it for a long time. And I have this rule of thumb. I'd like for your expert to tell me whether I should stick to it or not, but as far as red wines go, I usually only buy it or hold it until it's 5 years old. But I discovered at a recent Thanksgiving gathering that some relative had a Cabernet that was less than 5 years old, and it just tasted great. So what do you think about that? Is 5 years a sort of an arbitrary number?
I think years are tougher and tougher. You know, it used to be in the old days some of the wines had to age 20 years to be softer and stuff. Technology has changed. There's a lot more stainless steel, and they have things called rotary fermenters that make the wine like Shiraz, you know, that more concentrated red with not a lot of tannin. Tannin's what makes the wine bitter and chalky on your teeth, kind of thing. So I'm finding more and more that red wines are made to be consumed when you purchase them. And if you keep them for a while, they may get better. But I'd be real careful, because I'm talking to a lot of people. I get emails in some of the – I write for some publications and things, and people saying, look, I've kept this wine 10 years, and now it's falling apart, and it's unfortunate. So I guess if I were you, I would stick with the wine that you like, and you kind of know the path that it takes.
And I guess cheese is not sold before it's ready to go and to eat. You mentioned earlier, Rich, you said the paper the cheese comes wrapped in. You know, anybody who buys cheese in the grocery store doesn't know that that's possible, because it always comes wrapped in, like, shrink wrap or plastic or something. Should we take that out and repackage it, or only buy cheese that's packaged in paper?
Well, I mean, it's perfectly fine to buy cheese wrapped in plastic. I mean, the big problem with buying pre-wrapped, pre-cut cheese is you don't know how long that it's been sitting there in the case waiting for you to pick it up, and it's suffocating in that plastic, just begging you to take it out. So when you get home, I mean, I would wrap it in either parchment or wax paper. I mean, and then you can, if it's a softer cheese, put it in that and then maybe put plastic around it. That'll give just a little bit of air, allow it to breathe just a little bit, because you have to realize cheese is, you know, it is a living thing. I mean, there's enzymes and organisms in there that make the cheese great, and they need air.
Oh, do you ever have to perform a Heimlich maneuver on the cheese? No?
No.
To revive it?
No.
Okay. Just making sure.
What, there's a certain point where nothing
I've done that a few times with wine, but I've never.
Sometimes there's nothing you can do for a piece of cheese. It's too far gone.
Is there something you can do for wine that seems to be not corked or whatever, but just no longer at its peak?
You know what I do? I find wines in the back of my storage area, and it's not very good. It's like, I live in an old home, and it's hot in the summer, cold in the winter, and I'll find a bottle of really great Chardonnay that I should have opened 8 years ago, kind of thing. And what I do is I pour it on the rocks, and I pretend it's vermouth. And I'll go out in the garden, and I'll put some rosemary and thyme or something in it, and a slice of orange. And you know, there are tricks. And I would think you could do something with that. You could grate it on top of something, or you could make fondue. Or
a lot of people take cheese that's past its prime and make something called fromage fort. And that's where you take a whole lot of little bits of cheeses that have been lying around in your vegetable drawer, your meat drawer, and melt them together with some alcohol and a whole bunch of garlic. And so you make this nice spread. And so you've basically saved that cheese from the trash can.
Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Worth a try. You can have that with your Chardonnay over ice and some rosemary. Let's see. We have time for just a couple more calls. Let's go next to Ryan in Fort Worth. Hi, Ryan.
Yeah, hi. I'm calling from Fort Worth. It's first time. Love the show. I just wanted to call and find out about what possible cheese pairings would go really good with, like, a really nice Sauternes, and also, like, a single malt scotch, like an Islay malt or something like that, and I'll just take the answer out the air.
Thanks for your call.
Man, this is a good question. Good question.
One of my favorite cheeses to pair with scotch is, like, an Isle of Mull cheddar. It's actually a Scottish cheddar, and it's got a certain peatiness and smokiness in it, and, yeah, it just pairs really nicely with scotch.
And what was the other? He was talking about Sauternes.
Mm-hmm.
Classic Sauternes might be goat cheese, I think, again. A lot of times, it's something rich. A lot of times Sauternes paired with foie gras. You want rich, fatty, or something, but acid, too.
Yeah, and you can also pair that with a nice blue.
Yeah, blue.
Blue and sweet, they go great together.
Let's speak to Wilson next in Dallas. Hey, Wilson.
Yes. Years ago, I used to live in Germany and fell in love with the dry wines around Rüdesheim. Also enjoyed the Mosels up around Koblenz, which were very, very sweet. And when you go to the store now, you get Mosel Rhine Ruhr. And I'm wondering, do they blend these wines now? Because either that or my tastes have changed. And secondly, what do you think about the Maldecs from Mendoza in Argentina, which I've enjoyed when I travel there?
Thanks for your call.
Okay. Mosel, they're making drier and drier versions. And you'll see on the label, does it say Trocken or Hob, H-A-L-B, Trocken? They're starting to communicate. They're making them drier. For a while in the 60s and 70s, especially in Texas, they were sending over the sweet stuff. And you may have been drinking the sweet stuff over there too, but the world market demand is for a drier style, and they're starting to do it. And Malbec, which is one of the five red Bordeaux grapes for blending Bordeaux, has found a home, and that's Argentina. Malbec's pretty well given up on in Bordeaux, but in Argentina, it's their signature red, and they're incredible. And they're kind of pricey, in my opinion, now, but like many things, once the market kind of adjusts, then there's more producers, and it will be a little more affordable.
Can you guys give us some guidelines as to how much to buy before a party? How much cheese do we need if we're going to serve it as a, I guess, as an appetizer, and how much wine?
Well, I mean, a lot of that just depends on the number of guests. You know, and like we were talking about earlier, cheese is very sating. You don't need to eat a lot of it. And so, you know, generally speaking, if you plan for maybe a half an ounce per guest, mm-hmm. You know, you can. Because that's the thing, is that you don't need to break the bank to come up with a really nice cheese spread that will be wonderful for everybody at your party.
And I think the mistake people make with entertaining, especially holiday, is that people are going to be arriving at your place and going to the next one and the next one because they've got commitments socially to do. And my rule of thumb for dinner, if they're going to sit down and have dinner with you, is about a half bottle per person of wine. And but realize that if they're going to your party and reception, they're going somewhere else, it's probably they're not going to drink that much. And if you negotiate well, some stores, I don't know how legal this is, but they'll take returns and, or at least let you transfer. Like you can return the White Zinfandel and for a nice bottle of who knows what. But, you know, factor that in. In other words, don't open every bottle thinking that you're going to pour everything.
Yeah, you can always open more.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that return thing is another one of those things that's never actually happened at your house.
Yeah, I've never had that. But there are some stores, by the way. Centennial, I know, does this. I bet Siegel's does. They'll loan you glassware.
Wow.
Yeah, if you ask and call in advance enough and set it up or reserve it, and you know, they'll help you out with the thing.
Good to know. Daryl Beeson is a Texas-based sommelier, educator, and wine writer. Rich Rogers is the owner of Scardello Artisan Cheese in Dallas. You can find them. Is it Scardello.com?
ScardelloCheese.com.
ScardelloCheese.com. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.